Welcome to Ordinarily Extraordinary Conversations with Women in STEM. I'm your host, Kathy Nelson, an electrical engineer who loves to hear and share stories of other women in STEM. Well, I have a few things I'd like to talk about today. To start with, this is my 50th episode, which will be coming out on the first anniversary of Ordinarily Extraordinary's launch. I'm so excited about these milestones, as I really had no idea where this podcast would go when I launched it last year. And it has truly exceeded my expectations. Well, actually, I didn't really have any expectations, but I absolutely love doing this podcast. I love the amazing women that I've been able to meet, and I am so excited to be able to share their stories every week with you all who listen to this. And it's been really, really great, and I'm so glad that you've been with me for this past year, and I look forward to all the women that I get to talk with in the upcoming year, and I'm really just looking forward to being able to share this with you. Also last week, this podcast was listed as the number one Women in STEM podcast by FeedSpot. And this is really quite an honor for me. I am just so excited and so honored. And there's so many great Women in STEM podcasts out there. I would encourage you to check them out because there's so many great things that women are doing, so many stories for us to hear, and so many opportunities for us to learn and grow and just, hear what these great things that, women in STEM have done and are doing. And it's just really, really an honor to be out there. So thank you, FeedSpot, for that. And this is my 50th episode, as I mentioned, and I'm really excited to have my colleague and my mentor, Jody Bednar. Jody has a bachelor's degree in telecommunications management and in women leadership program in executive management from Yale University. She's been in the telecommunications and consulting industry for 30 years. She's a fabulous leader at my company, and I'm really excited to share her story. So how are you? How was your vacation?
Awesome. Very well. Very not well-deserved, but I needed it. 100%.
What national parks did you guys go to?
We went to Zion and Bryce.
Okay. How much hiking and stuff did you get to do?
Good. I went up to Angel's Landing, did the Emerald Pools. Have you been there?
I have not. No.
Yeah.
On my bucket list.
Yeah. We did Bryce Canyon, went down. There's a peekaboo loop, but it was still closed, some of it. So, yeah, it was good.
So let's talk about you. So let's start with, what do you do currently for a job?
Yeah, right now I have a title of a director at a business and technology consulting firm that is focused on energy and utilities. It's pretty much like equivalent, I guess, to a partner level role in some of the other big four.
And you just moved into a new role within your like directorship in the last couple of months, right? So what did that change mean for you?
I think changing between any position is difficult. It's not only difficult for leaders to make that transition, but also for the team as well, because every time a new leader, comes in, we all have different philosophies and different ways of working. And so that can have a huge impact. But my new role right now is I'm leading our Chicago Energy and Utilities practice. It's around 70 people at various different levels.
I know you said like the transition has been like a little bit challenging. So you're also, I want to say, one of the few women in leadership within our company and within the practice. And just for the listeners, we work together. How has being one of the only women in leadership been for you?
I think at times it's exhilarating, and at times it feels very lonely. But I also think that I have built a really good personal board of directors within the firm that I know are there to help me. And I've taken it upon myself in a lot of ways to start, like, there's very few women. Well, first of all, there's no woman in my position in the firm yet. And before that, this new position, I took it upon myself to really get the other women together that are on what we call the line, and just to build a network of other women. So when I need help or I have a situation or I just need to vent, I have other women that I can go to, even though they're not in my own practice.
So building a community, an internal community, which I think is like one of the most important things. And one of the things that I think has, at least like when I was younger, was really hard to do, because even like finding other women that did what you do was hard.
Yeah. Or I think it sometimes it's just finding people that, you know, we talk about diversity all the time and diverse perspectives, and, you know, men and women think differently. Mm-hmm. We look at situations differently. And so I have women on my personal board of directors, but I also have men. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to kind of go between the two and get the different perspectives. So I have the luxury of having both.
Well, and I think having both is really important, because you do get the different perspectives and different advice and different ways of looking at things. And I think that's really important. You don't want just, I don't want to say one viewpoint, because everyone has their individual viewpoints, but you want, you know, diverse ways of thinking and things like that. So Before I had come here, I had not heard of a board of directors, like a personal board of directors. What does that mean, and how is that used within our company?
You know, my personal board of directors, I don't know if I like have it. I don't even have it written down. I think it's those people that you go to, that you trust, that you know are going to be honest with you, that understand kind of the environment that you're working in, right? Because that's half the battle, is just understanding. This personal board of directors I've always used, and it changes and it morphs, but it's comprised of both men, women, different ages, different roles, a few outside of the company, because, you know, it's just not about business. I think in this day and age, right, it's about how do you blend and integrate your personal life and your work life together.
One of the terms that I have been using lately is it takes a village, in my case, to build an engineer. So is this kind of like your village?
Yeah, I think it is my village. Yes, I would agree.
So is it a combination of like mentors and coaches and... there was a woman I just interviewed. I think she called them thought partners. So is it kind of like a combination of like these types of people that you're going to, and they're like your personal board of directors, or what kinds of different skill sets are you bringing in to be your board of directors?
Well, I think that trust factor is huge first, right? Right now on my board of directors, I have women, you know, that are on the line, what we say in consulting, and women that are in more of our shared services. I have men from other practices that I've built a relationship with. So I guess thought partners is a good way to look at it, but there are people that I can go to and say, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. Like this transition, like I don't care if you're have 30 years experience like myself, right? Anytime anyone takes on a new role, there's a huge shift, you know, not only on, you know, how you view yourself, but how others view you. And the things that you say, the actions that you take are much more, are highly scrutinized, I guess, as a leader, because you're leading people, 70 people that have a different perspective, a different background, way of looking at things, glass half empty, glass half full people, right? That's what I try to have on my board of directors, a very diverse group of people or thought leaders that will look at things differently. And they always, when I ask like, hey, this is like what I'm dealing with in this change of job or role, they all have a tidbit of advice that is completely different. And then you couple that all together and it's very, very helpful and mindful, keeps you mindful.
What does a typical day in your life look like? And I ask this question of almost all my podcast guests, and I think it's a really hard question because no 2 days are the same, but just take like an average day. What does that typically look like for you?
I'm up and at them at 6 a.m. I have usually take a walk with the dogs and, you know, start the day with breakfast or a juice or something. And then usually I'm in my seat. Now with COVID, it's kind of interesting, somewhere between the 7:30 to 8 o'clock time frame. You know, I think like most people, I'm on nonstop Teams and Zoom meetings until anywhere between 5 to 7 at night. It is a bit of everything from working with clients, and I love working with clients. I enjoy their perspective and their point of view, working with our team, maybe doing some coaching and mentoring, talking with kind of more strategizing on certain, whether that be an internal initiative, a project that we're doing with a client, or some other challenge that we have. So you're right, no day is any different. But I think now I have to pick and choose. Where do I focus? Because sometimes I'll have 2 or 3 meetings, right, on my calendar at the same time. But I always try to reserve from noon to 1. And probably about 90% of the time, I stick to that hour, whether I choose to go down and grab something to eat, get some fresh air, take a little bit of a walk, or, you know, I choose to kind of work through. But it's that hour that is kind of my sacred time.
What kind of challenges have you found from going from an in-person environment to working remotely, and now like we're starting to transition a little bit back to the office? What are like the main challenges that you've found, and what are you looking forward to most when we come out of being remote?
It's almost like a blur to me. So not only did I have to deal with the pandemic last year, so we were shutting down our offices on a Wednesday night. I was set to fly to New York. That Monday, I was diagnosed with cancer. So not only did I have to go through last year maintaining a work balance and that transition, but then I found myself kind of one of like 10 people in a hospital, right, during the early COVID days. So it's, I don't know if I have the same journey over the last year. I think there have been a lot of fear of the unknown. I think obviously with a cancer diagnosis, there's always a fear of, am I going to live? I think what I learned from that experience is pretty much I can do anything. I think it gave me incredible strength. And I learned to live in the moment, which goes into my returning to work is, you know, cancer, you realize really quick that your life changes within 4 words. You have cancer, 3 words, right? And you realize somewhere along that journey that the only thing that you can do is stay present, because every test will cause a different shift or a different direction. Every surgery does, every treatment does. And you just really have to live in that moment. And I think it's really important as we look towards this return to work, there's a lot of anxiety, right? There is a lot of, especially in our industry where you travel a lot, people are now used to being with their family and having dinner and their children. And, you know, what does that really mean for them? And so what I've been telling everyone is just try to stay, like, we don't know what the future is. Right now, we're returning to work in September. Our offices are open. People can choose to go back if they feel like it, but I'm sure it'll change, right? It was April, then it was June, now it's September, right? So don't worry about the things that you know, because that's where you make, excuse my language, make shit up. And it causes more angst and anxiety. So I think everyone is going to be in a different place. Everyone has to take one moment at a time. And when they're ready, then, you know, like to me, when I went to the office for the very first time, it was like going back to school. I didn't know what I was doing. I had to like register and I felt anxious, right? But I did it. And I went into the office and I was just happy as a clam. Because I get to see people that I haven't seen in like a year, right? That I just wanted to, I'm a hugger, just wanted to reach out and hug somebody, right? So it was actually, I'm very glad that I did that, because it didn't make it some big scary thing anymore. It's like, oh, okay, I can do this, right? I have the courage, I have the strength. It was great to see people. It was great to see our new offices. Not that I'm ready to go back every day, right? My yoga pants are way too much more comfortable than my dress pants.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a very personal journey for everybody. And, you know, we're going to have to, as a business and as a leadership team, try to meet people where they're at and have a little more empathy and understanding that, you know, everybody's not going to be in the same place. And we'll just have to navigate those challenges or opportunities, whatever, as we go on through it. But today is today. It's Monday, right? That's all we have to worry about. So.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree with you, and I guess I didn't realize that you got your cancer diagnosis at that same time that everything was shutting down. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? I mean, are you fine talking about that? Because,
Sure.
and we talked about this, like, so my son was diagnosed with cancer like 2 years ago. I don't know if it's different when it's you being diagnosed or your kid being diagnosed, but I can't think of like anything worse to go through. Like it was, you know, I just remember, so I'll maybe talk a little bit about my experience. I took my son in, we were planning, we had this like month-long trip to Asia planned. I had a trip to Africa planned before that for work, and my son had been having like a cough and a runny nose. And then we were out at my in-laws because my husband was building a ramp for his dad, and my son woke up with a sore throat. And I'm like, okay, well, I want to take him in. I don't want it. He gets strep quite easily. I'm like, I don't want him to have strep when we're in Asia for a month. So I take him into urgent care, and it was pediatric urgent care. And so he's seeing like a physician's assistant, but then there was a student in. And so she's being, I feel like, more like doing things more carefully because she's new, right? And she's like, huh, he's got a pretty big lymph node. And so it goes from like this very routine throat culture, which I'm honestly not even sure if he had the throat culture, like to, huh, this is interesting. And then the physician assistant is there. Then they bring a doctor in. Then they're getting out a ruler. Then they're asking me all these questions. And in like 5 minutes, it goes from this like routine appointment to you need to get him downtown and have an ultrasound. And within 4 hours, they're like, he has a 3 centimeter nodule. You need to come back. And this was a Friday afternoon. You need to come back Monday morning. And we're on the other side of the state, which actually ended up is probably good because we could do all this stuff. My in-laws were there and everything. And you need to see a pediatric endocrinologist and get an ultrasound and a biopsy like right now. And it's like my world shifted like in 5 minutes. And I mean, and his is good. Like his is a very treatable cancer and stuff. How was your experience and how did your mind and life shift?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry you had to go through that. I think it's a journey, and I think it's a very personal journey. So I don't know what it would feel like as a mom to have your child go through cancer. I think it just, as a mother, I think it was probably quite devastating, right? And like, I don't even know how that would be. I think for me, when those words come out, it's almost like you're living, like walking on a cloud. I don't know. It's like a mental, like, is like, I don't even know if I had a thought other than, okay, this is happening. Like, this is really happening, right?
Well, I
It
think
was.
the word itself is terrifying. Like, I never realized how terrifying a word that is until that day.
Yeah. And I thank God my partner was diagnosed with cancer. So I can tell you, I've been through cancer now twice. The person walking beside someone with cancer, and then the person with cancer. And it's a very different experience, the one having cancer versus supporting someone with cancer. And I learned, unfortunately, I've been on both sides of that fence. But I think, you know, having cancer, you really realize all of the things that go through your head, the questioning, right? You see how fragile life is and how things can change in a moment. You start to think about your own mortality, very like you're forced to, right? It's not like, oh, like you're just forced to. I think there's a lot that has changed for me personally. You know, I think it's, I just hope like out of everything, there's blessings, right? And we talked about earlier, just the whole fact of being present. To me, that's like most people in life don't spend their lives living in the moment. They're either looking back or looking forward. So that to me was a blessing that came out of it. The gratitude that you feel for others and just the gift of life. So that's another blessing. And then you get to see the beauty of the people around you, right? Because people that you somehow news travels fast and you get these random cards in the mail or, you know, a text or a story like, hey, somebody called me, like my sister, such and such person called me and, you know, wanted to see how you're doing and said, hey, you're just almost been an inspiration, or those kind of things come up and you really get to see the impact that you've had in life as well. So yeah, I think, you know, now through it, of course, there was times of like fear and anxiety and all the things that come with that, but incredibly feel blessed because there's always somebody that's worse off, right? You think about life, and I think as women too, maybe this is, you know, we just think about that, is that there's always someone, like I have a family member right now that has metastatic breast cancer, right? And you look at your journey versus their journey and you're like, oh, thank God I had it easy comparatively.
Yeah, I shouldn't have been laughing because it's not funny, but when you said that, I just remember like when I was in the hospital with Anthony, he had two different surgeries, and walking through, and he was in a, you know, a children's wing of the hospital, and walking through and seeing, you know, these like hospital bassinets of kids and, you know, like babies being checked in for their surgeries and stuff, and going like, It made me grateful that all he had was thyroid cancer. Oh, and same, and then like we ended up like moving him to Mayo, because his cancer had metastasized to his lungs. And so he has to be treated like long-term, you know, sitting in the pediatric waiting room and what we saw at Mayo, you know, and I'm like, And it weirdly does make you grateful for what you have, because there are people that are so much worse. And that's like, it's such a weird way to think about it, but I was kind of laughing because that's exactly how I thought about it. Right. You know, and it's so interesting. But you're doing well, right? Yeah. I mean, you're.
You know, I think half the, I mean, if I can do a plug-in, like get your screening and, you know, do everything as much, because people that catch it early are so much better off. I almost look at cancer now with all of the progress that we've made, is a lot of cancer is survivable. If you catch it early and it doesn't metastasize, you know, just be diligent. Cancer is just has, like you said, that fear around that word, right? I think that we all have. But to me, it's like, I'm on an 8-year journey, right? So yes, I had 4 surgeries last year. I don't know how many treatments, but this is just not going to end. Mm-hmm. And so now I have to learn, like anyone with MS or any other disease, is, you know, you got to do your screening. You got to, you know, follow up every so often. I'm going to have periodic treatments. And so, yeah, it's 8 years. I'm not clear for 8 more years. I'm going to be 58 by then, or 59. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I think like Anthony is, I don't think his, like the type his, he has, I don't think it ever goes into remission. So he'll have like screenings throughout his life. I have to say, like, one of the things that I guess wasn't really expecting was the anxiety around those screenings, because it's like you watch on TV and movies and the cancer is back. I mean, that's what you see in movies. And I get like really like physically, I like probably for the day or two before the screenings,
right?
just, my mind is just completely gone. Like I'm useless. Things that I probably shouldn't tell you. I'm useless.
No.
I mean, I'm there, but I'm, you know, it's very, there's a lot of anxiety around that. Do you have that too?
You know, yes, I think, and sometimes I don't even know it, that it's there. It's like just subconsciously, but yeah, a couple days or so before, like I see it on my calendar. I'm like, okay, like stay present, right? Be here, be now. You got 5 days before you got to get there. But yeah, and I was treated at Rush Medical Center here in Chicago. And like, I just dread going to the hospital now and walk, like, I'm just like walking that journey through the, you know, hospital, walking that journey, going through the testing. Yeah, I think subconsciously that fear is always there. And, you know, also when you have cancer, it's like, oh, what's that ache? Oh God. You know, I had a side effect of my chemo, which was like this dry cough, like deep cough. And I thought, oh my God, it did go to my lungs, right? I think if anybody, they're always like, oh shit. You know,
Anthony, because he's always coughing and he has cancer cells in his lungs. So I'm like, are they spreading?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have to just say, you know, let's not, like, we'll worry about that when we get there.
Yeah. To your point of like staying present, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you start thinking like that, I will say that's one of the huge things that I found, that if I start thinking into the future, I get super, super, super anxious. And that's something I've like really, really been focusing on, is really trying to be present, because you can't control anything, right? Like it's completely out of your control. And if you stay present, it's manageable. And if you think about what can happen 5 years from now, it's unmanageable, and your mind can go to like really dark places really quickly.
I think it's important for all of us, just in general, like the more, you know, well, that's why meditation and other things are so important for mental health, is because it is about staying present, living in the moment. And, you know, think about all the anxiety that's out there, whether in your job, in your personal life, thinking about what the future is. No one knows that.
Right.
I think the more, you know, people can realize like the value of staying present. I mean, obviously you still got to look towards the future, right? But living for today, I think, whether it be in your personal relationships, work relationships, your job, is, you know, tackle what you need to tackle today with an eye towards the future.
Has this experience, has it changed your work viewpoint? Or maybe I should like how, like the importance that you put on work?
I think I'm more aware of the impacts. And so sometimes when work gets a little crazy, and my own crazy comes out, I have to put myself back in center. I think that's just human. We all kind of go there, right? It has impacted me in the fact of whatever I'm going to do, I want to make sure that it's done with a purpose. Especially at this stage of my life, you know, I better be doing something that I enjoy to do, that gives back energy. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And we're pretty similar in how long we have been in the industry and how long we've been out working and in our ages. And so, yes, it 1,000% makes sense, at least to me, because the older I get, the more important that becomes. Mm-hmm. And I think your work, you know, like I think when you're younger, you know, it's about getting the experience, getting that first job, getting that paycheck. Like it's all of these other, like, I feel like more external factors. And then the older I get, it's more of like, what brings me fulfillment? What brings me happiness? What brings me joy? What makes me feel like I'm contributing to society as a whole? How am I giving back to others? And those become much more important to me the older that I get.
Yeah. And some of it is the same. I think cancer kind of accelerates that, right? In a way. But I've never been like, my new job, I didn't take my job because it's, you know, a larger organization, or it's some sort of financial benefit, or I have more power, control, whatever words you want to use. I did it because I want to make it better, right? We have an awesome culture at my current company. We have a lot of great individuals. We're not as diverse as I would like to see. So I just want to leave it better than where I found it and be able to move the needle on diversity. There's a huge amount of talent on our team. I want to see, I call them the kids. I want to see what they're going to turn into, right? And if I can help, they may not always take the advice. It will be interesting to see where they go. And if I can help them prepare for their future, then that's what's really important to me right now in life as a leader. And hopefully they'll do great things.
Yeah, I will say that's one of the things that I have found very interesting about coming here, because I spent so long in the utility industry, which is pretty old. And so coming from a very old organization, and then the organization that I was at for a more short term, they were also older than I was. So I felt young until I came here. And now I'm like, wow, there's, like you said, kids. Like, I call them kids too. I think it's great because they have a whole different perspective. They have a whole different energy level. I think it's really fun. It's so different than the environments that I have been in for most of my career, that I think the different perspectives and the different viewpoints that they have, I think, are just, they're great. And I agree that, like, you know, watching them, you know, grow up, if you want to call it that way, and like refer to them as kids, I think is, mm-hmm. I think that's really fun. And being able to have a impact in that is probably something that's got to be fulfilling too.
Mm-hmm. I hope you're enjoying this podcast and Jody's story. If you enjoy the podcast and would like to support it, head over to your favorite podcast platform where you can rate it, or even better, write a review, which will help other people find my podcast and bring these women's stories to more listeners. You can also find me, Kathy Nelson, at www.ordinarily-extraordinary.com. Thanks, and back to Jody's story.
You have a degree in telecommunications management?
Yeah.
What is that, and what made you decide? Well, I mean, I know what telecommunications management is. I am a telecom engineer, but what is that from a schooling perspective, and what made you decide to go that route? And in my mind, I think of it as kind of probably like a combination of like business and management in a technical area.
Yeah, you're spot on. So you have to almost go back to the mid-80s. There wasn't an internet then.
I know.
Well, there was, but it was at dark.
We didn't know about it.
We didn't really know about it. I didn't know what I was going to be. A marine biologist is what I was thinking to do with my life. And I took a computer class, right? And it was with Mac at the time, and started doing some programming. And I thought, wow, this is pretty interesting. And a teacher back then was talking about the future and about computers will be talking to one another across networks and da-da-da-da-da. And as much as I liked, like, it really was the thing that put a spark in my brain, I guess, in my being, like, this is really cool. However, I don't want to sit behind a computer tapping on a keyboard all day. So I was looking through different curriculums, and it was a lot of computer programming courses at colleges then, but there was really nothing that kind of took that networking business kind of combination. You could be an electrical engineer, right? You could take those kind of fields. And
I'm not even sure that telecom was even talked about a whole lot back then.
Yeah, it wasn't. Like, it was more like, eventually these things are going to talk to each other.
Or maybe like networking, you know, like, yeah. Token ring and.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't even think Ethernet was around then, but I realized that I didn't want to be a computer programmer. I didn't want to be an engineer, like, you know, soldering circuit boards and that kind of stuff. So you know, I kind of found this degree. It was a 4-year degree and it was at a tech school. And I said, yeah, that sounds kind of, let's go for it. And that's what I did. And then, you know, I graduated and I worked for a retail company that was using satellite communications to all of their pharmacies for drug information. And then the whole tech boom started. I got out of school at the right, you know, 1990. And then it just 3 years later, it was a zoo, right? With, you know, the internet and people buying computers, and then you could talk to each other. And it was the tech boom, tech bust, right? In the 90s. So it was interesting.
How was school for you? Did you find, and with a blend of business and technical, were there a lot of women in your classes? Were there not very many women in your classes? How did you find that?
I think there was two of us.
Okay.
And I think the other, in some of my classes, you know, I mean, you have speech and all the other basics, right, that you have to go through. So some majors kind of intersected. Yeah, no, there wasn't a lot of chicks.
Did you find that difficult or did you find that fine? Did you have challenges with like professors or anything? Or what was that experience?
You know, I don't remember because I just thought it was normal.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been the only woman in the room for most of my career. I think I kind of just learned how to navigate it, you know, navigate the environment, because what are you going to do? I mean, this is a field I chose. This is the way it is. And I've had a lot of great mentors that were male throughout my career that kind of took me underneath their wing. And women at that time were vicious, right? Because unfortunately, we were eating each other up because there was only so many positions. And I came across a lot of horrible women back then.
I think it still exists. I think it's getting better. I think, you know, women are realizing how important it is to bring each other up. And I think more women are reaching out. I haven't experienced that in a very, very long time. But to your point about at school, there's four women out of 75 in my graduating class in electrical engineering. And I didn't think it was weird either. My dad taught engineering technology and, you know, he wanted one of his daughters to be an engineer. And I never thought there was anything weird about going into engineering at all. It wasn't until I started my first job that I felt that I was weird and that I was one of the only. And that I would say was much harder than school for me. How was transitioning into the workplace for you?
I think the same thing. I mean, there was like my first job out of college was in a network operations center, right? Like I talked about this company using satellite. I worked shift work because it was 7x24 because some of the stores were open that long. Women were not supportive of other women back then. And so men were more supportive of women than women were. So it was kind of an interesting perspective actually is like, oh, like I was young, naive, like, hey, you know, let's all work together. Yay. And you learn pretty quickly that women weren't your friends, or they could be. But if you were in the same department or, you know, competing for the same job, it really wasn't a healthy environment. And I think fast forward, you're right. You know, I've seen a tremendous amount of movement over the last 10 years where there's women's organizations, women looking out for other women. There's more opportunity, as you said earlier, Kathy, but we got a long way to go. You know, I have women that I know that are African American. I gotta tell you, those women, like, you know, they look out for other Black women like I've never seen. And I wish everyone would learn and take their cue. It's really amazing. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And I think if women just put our differences aside or and just help lift each other up, as you said, more and more. And I think we'd probably make a lot more progress.
Oh, for sure. I 1,000% agree. I will say I have found, and it could be the fact that, so through this podcast, I have found an amazing network of women. And it could be the fact that if people are on the podcast and we're talking about women in STEM, mm-hmm. they have that mindset of trying to include other women. I mean, so there could be some of that, but I feel like the women that I have been able to meet and been privileged to meet through this have the best intentions and really truly want to lift women up in STEM, whatever that STEM field is. And it has been honestly like a source of inspiration for me because I see this in a way that I haven't seen it in my career. And mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. Like it's so invigorating and just makes me feel happy to have this and be able to, you know, bring it to whoever listens and to be able to bring, to build those communities because they're so important and you can feel so alone, especially when you're young and you're starting out and you feel like, you know, you feel like a unicorn in a bad way. Mm-hmm. When you start out, you feel like you don't know what you're doing because, you know, you feel like, oh, I just spent all this time in college, but how you apply that outside of college, I think is also difficult. So you feel all of these things against you. And then if you feel alone and you don't feel like you have community, I feel like that drives women to leave their fields and go do something else. And that, you know, we work on these pipelines of trying to get women into STEM fields, but we also need to work on providing environments to keep them there too. And to, you know, get them to the point of having job fulfillment and career fulfillment and, you know, being that they, you know, to have happy places to go and not feel like they are miserable or the struggles that you have when you start out in a job.
Yeah. And I don't know if they realize how, I don't want to say lucky they have it, but the next generation, I think, really does have a lot more support than we did. So I wrote down a note. Do they really understand the struggles that women have gone through to get us where we are? I think that's an interesting question.
I remember one of my very early, I used to belong to Society of Women Engineers. I haven't been a member probably since I had kids because I just didn't have time to go to meetings. But I remember one of my meetings, there was an older woman who I think she was even retired, you know, and retired engineer in like the early 90s. A retired female engineer in the early 90s would be like just a complete anomaly, right? And I remember thinking to myself, you know, because we were talking about, you know, like she talked about how the challenges that she had and things like that. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, I'm so glad that we had women like this that paved the way for us, as though it was done. And then, you know, and that was, you know, very early on in my career. And then I'm like, oh shit, we got a lot of paving to do, you know, like, that road is really not all that smooth yet. And I think to your point, I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, like we make this progress, what are the generations after us? What is their viewpoint of it? You know, I think that would be interesting to understand because we've made a ton of progress, right? Like if it hadn't been for women like that woman who talked at Society of Women Engineers, I probably couldn't have been an engineer, right? Mm-hmm. Because women couldn't be, there was a time women could not be engineers. Sure. And so there's that. And then there's like all of these softer, more squishy things of like making it a place that you can belong and grow and move into leadership. And I mean, I think that that's still, I think, a big area is leadership. Women in STEM fields in leadership, I think that's definitely a shortfall that we have. It could be the pipeline. I'm sure that's part of it. But, you know, like women in medical fields, like so women doctors, there are more women getting medical degrees than men, mm-hmm. but there still aren't very many women in leadership roles in the medical fields. And so, you know, what is driving that and how do we get to be more equitable in all levels of STEM, not just going into it and not just staying in it, but how do we get more women so that you aren't the only and that there's, you know, opportunities for that. And I think that's still challenging.
If you look at the C-suite, right, where do you find like statistics always crack me up. It's always how you slice and dice the data, right? But if you look at STEM fields versus non-STEM fields, right, you'll see a vast difference between women in the C-suite. So if you think about traditional, like chief people officers, chief HR, you'll see a lot more women in those, sure. Right?
Yep.
Like
yep.
50% or higher. But then you start looking in things like high tech, you know, CEO roles, CFO roles, CIO roles. You don't see as many women there. So there's always progress to be made. I think what I've seen over the last few years, which is also very, very important, is bringing men along with us, right? Mm-hmm. And the value of having a diverse leadership team and the financial benefits to the company, right? Like some of these studies and so forth, I think are really waking men up, boards up to the fact that you need that diversity of thought is uber important.
Well, and I think being able to put it into a financial value on mm-hmm. that right. really triggers people's minds, right? It, you know, because it's not just the, we want a more diverse, it's workforce. We want a more diverse workplace, but here is how it actually financially benefits the company. And I think being able to talk about that is probably the best way to make inroads within companies. So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, because you talked about this at our company, or I think it may have been something that I read, and it's something that really like hit home with me in probably a different way, but you talk about how when you changed from the job or the company that you were at before the company that we're at now, mm-hmm. You didn't feel like you could bring your whole self to work. Mm-hmm. And when I started out at my utility, I had parts of my personality that I hid because I probably worked more with technicians than I did with engineers. And there's even like less women technicians. And so I was very cognizant of not feeling or of not letting like my more feminine traits come out. So like I sewed and I cooked and I baked cakes and I didn't talk about any of these things. And I tried to be as much of one of the guys as I possibly could. And as I've gotten older, I don't want to say felt bad about that, kind of felt bad about that, because I think it's really important to be your authentic self and mm-hmm. to be able to be true to who you are. Do you want to talk about like that transition of like moving from a company who couldn't be your whole self and going to a company where you could be your whole self?
I think when I moved to my current company, it has a culture that respects people for who they are. You know, when I think about what was it for me, I felt as though in my previous roles, I worked for a very large Fortune 100 company. You know, there's a certain company culture that is there. I felt like I couldn't really be myself. So I decided that whatever company I was going to go to next, that it had to be but open-minded, like a culture that wasn't built after 100 years of history, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at companies, culture was really, really important. And a culture that respected all kinds of people, race, religion, creed, sexual orientation, anything. And that for me personally, you know, being in a same-sex relationship, I felt like I had to hide who I was personally, and I wasn't going to do that anymore. Of course, things have changed a lot over the last, you know, 20 years, 25 years, and the acceptance of that. I just wasn't going to do it anymore because I felt as though there was a lot of energy spent not being my authentic self, right? And worry and stress and all the things that it's about energy. You only have so much energy to give on a given day. And you have a choice on where you put that energy towards. And a lot of my energy was spent hiding who I was in my life.
So did you make a conscious decision to leave the company and look for a different job for that reason?
No, I think there was just the company I was with was downsizing and selling off different divisions. My division got sold off. I just really didn't feel like it was the right place for me. I actually had a couple different job offers at the time. And really what it came down to is culture. So I had another huge, large Asian company that I could have went and worked for in a sales manager capacity. I had another small firm I was talking to of people that I used to work with. And then I had my current company. And I just liked the people. They were all nice.
Nice people are good.
You know? Yes. And it was a feel. Like sometimes you just know the feel, right? And I feel as though I've been able to be Jody. I mean, there's always limitations, right? I mean, you know, it is corporate. It is a business. And there's a certain, I want to say, way you have to act, or I'm trying to find the right words, Calf, but.
Like a decorum, kind of?
Yeah. You know, I mean, just, you can't like talk like a drunken sailor. So, you know, I just think it's, it's been great. I feel like I've excelled too by doing that. I left management many, many years ago because I didn't want to be in leadership because of some of the things we talked about, right? I was very highly competitive. I was in the telecom, like service providers. People weren't as collaborative, or maybe they were in front of other people and then they all went off into their own silos and the way that they wanted to do it. And it was just not something I wanted to do. So I walked away from leadership for 15 years. And I was really hesitant here at my current firm to get back into a leadership role. But I feel like the combination between me being able to be me and working with a bunch of, you know, the company culture and working with some really great people actually propelled me back into leadership.
Well, and I think from a standpoint of being able to be authentically you and being in leadership makes other people feel like they can be authentically them too, whatever that looks like. And I think that's really important because I think there are companies who talk the talk and there's companies that walk the walk. And I think there's more companies that talk the talk than walk the walk. And so I think, God, that could be like a tongue twister if I said that a few times. But I think that's really important to be able to look and say, yeah, I can actually be my true self and I don't have to hide and I can move up into roles within leadership too, you know? Right. And I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this concept of authenticity and bringing your authentic self is like bringing just the true you, right? And all of you. And so I think it's really important for business. Like knowledge of oneself, I think allows you to also be a better leader. Because like I know all of my, I always call them my growth edges. I know what my habits are, good, bad, the ugly. Being more mindful of one's self allows you to then be able to share, you know, and be vulnerable with others that you're working with, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think it's really important. I've been reading Brené Brown's Dare to Lead, which talks a lot about vulnerability within leadership. And I think that in the past, leaders don't, and I mean, it talks about how there's different levels of vulnerability and everything, but mm-hmm. you know, how important that is. I mean, to a point, right? But being able to be seen as being vulnerable and being able to use that to your advantage to be a better leader.
Mm-hmm. And I think if people can read through the BS, as I always say, right? If you're trying to pitch them a line of something that you don't believe yourself, people aren't stupid. They're going to catch up, right? Pick up on that. You know, you also have to believe what you're you're saying and selling. Otherwise, you can quickly build mistrust in an organization if you don't do that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. What are you most proud of in your career so far?
I want to say just surviving it. There's so much, you know, over 30 years that has happened. That's a tough one. I think the moments that make me, or that have felt the most, is hearing from someone that you didn't expect to hear from on the impact that you had in their life. And those are pretty special moments. Like, I don't think a lot of us really understand our impact that we have. And whether that be, you know, wasn't always in leadership roles or whatever, but I just talked with someone recently that said, you were my favorite manager ever. And I've never been able to find someone like you in the 20 years since we worked together. Those things mean a lot. I don't know if there's the one thing. I think I'm pretty proud of everything that I've been able to do throughout the years. The twists, the turns, in leadership, not in leadership, like looking back, I'm proud of all the things that I've been able to accomplish. And, you know, hopefully in the next, how many ever years are left in my career, I'll have the most impact. And that's really, you know, we talk about building the next generation of leaders, and I feel like that's my purpose now. I hopefully will retire from the company I'm currently at. That's my plan, at least right now. And I'm hoping that I can leave it a better place. And to me, that will be success.
I think it's great. And you brought something to mind. Like, I talk a lot about teachers having such an impact in my life and in you know, people's lives and in what they do and stuff. But what you just brought up is almost like the same side of that, right? Of like, you know, having such an impact that people come back to you and, you know, and thank you for that. And I think you also brought up something that also seems really important, which is to acknowledge the people who have had an impact in your life. And I think that's really important to do too, so that they do know that.
I always tell people, like, when I'm on my deathbed, I'm not going to worry about any one of the companies and the work I did. But I will think about the people that I had relationships with. And I think that's who we are as human beings, is what matters most is the relationships that we built.
What advice would you give to girls or young women thinking about going into STEM?
Do it. I mean, we need... It's a fun career, right? I think we need more women in STEM fields, because I think of the future and I think about artificial intelligence, machine learning, all the stuff that's, you know, it's just going to be a different world than we grew up in, Kathy. And this is where diversity and diverse perspectives are going to shape how we as a human race evolve, especially in technology, engineering, and science, math, you name it, the arts. So I think we need that diversity, not only in gender diversity, but all aspects of diversity in those fields, because it's really going to shape how the world goes, I guess, in a way. I mean, with technology evolving as fast as it is, I think of things like robots and drones, and, you know, look at what's happening with social media and the impacts to society. Whatever's coming next, it needs a woman's touch.
Well, and you just brought up a book that I actually just took it off my desk, but there's a book called Invisible Women, which is about artificial intelligence and how, by not having diversity, artificial intelligence and facial recognition and all these things are defaulting to white men, because that's who's developing it. And so if you don't have diversity, you're designing things that don't, and not necessarily on purpose, right? I mean, there's this unconscious bias. There's, you know, it's the what the people who are designing it know. But if you don't have women and people of color and that diversity, you're designing things that don't work for the whole world. They work for like one group of people. So I think that's super important. I do hope that we get more women into STEM fields, and especially engineering. Any more women in engineering?
Yeah. Well, and just technology and cybersecurity, and it's, you know, we need more women in leadership.
We do.
You know, I think some fields, but we need women to hang in there. We need women to put themselves out there more so that, you know, we always talk about the glass ceiling, and is we need more women in leadership roles in the companies that they're at, or organizations, because I think it's uber critical. I want to leave my current company and have more women in different offices, leading divisions, leading practices, hopefully leading our innovation team would be fun. A good role for a female as well. So I don't want to be the only one in the company that at my level. And we need women to, you know, ask for what they need to be successful. I think sometimes we just expect, like through osmosis, people are just going to realize like additional coaching, mentoring, training, maybe rotational programs to keep women engaged and progressing in their own career development. So working with other leaders to ask for what you want and what you need. I think a little bit more passive, like, than maybe some of our male counterparts, right? Like, what is the old thing they talk about? Like, men have to have 60% of the qualifications to go for a job versus women have to have all of them. Yeah. Take risks. Let's, you know, take a little risk. Maybe it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. But the things that I've failed at in life are the ones that I've learned the most from. So if you don't put yourself out there, you're not going to learn.
Right. And there's so much growth that comes from failure that it's not, I don't even know that we should even be using the word failure, you know, like think of them as like learning opportunities and, you know, put a different spin on it.
Yeah. It's not, what was it somebody said to me recently and I loved it. It's not how fast you fall. It's how quick you get up. Mm-hmm. Like we all stumble. We all don't do everything perfectly. It's how fast you get up. And I think that's what we all need to do, is realize that by taking those risks, you are going to fall, but you're going to get back up, dust your knees off, and try again.
And it's okay to fall.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, those are the things you learn the most from, right?
Yep. And I think that that's where, you know, communities can come in as being helpful with that, because they can make you not feel bad when you fall, right? Not feel like a failure because you have fallen. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and you know what? You put yourself in stretch positions. It's hard. I'm in a stretch position now, right? I think anytime you take a new job or a new role, I don't care if you have 30 years under your belt or 10 years. It stretches you. I haven't done everything perfectly. I don't expect myself to either. But I've learned from my mistakes. The ones that have really hurt are the ones that I'll probably never do again. So that's, well, I know I won't, right? Once you get burned. So,
yep.
Yeah. But this has been fun. I enjoyed this.
Well, I'm so glad that we got to do this. I mean, we talk quite a bit, but I feel like we talk about me more because you have been mentoring me, and which I very much appreciate. So I'm really glad that I got to know more about you and get to share your story. And this has been awesome. I thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah. And thanks for inviting me. And you might have to edit out some of my curse words. I apologize.
I leave them in. It's a podcast. It's not FCC, and
yeah.
It's authentic.
It is. It's my authentic self, and I tried to refrain from using my my normal course of my mother would not be happy.
I doubt your mother seems lovely. I'm so glad that I got to meet her. I'm sure she would still be happy.
Yes. I think she's amazed. She didn't have the same opportunities that we did. And I'm sure the next generation will have more opportunities than we did. It's just, that's progress. So it's all
good. I hope so. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you. And I appreciate you being on here.
Yeah. Thanks for the invite and take care. And I'm sure we'll talk soon.
I'm sure we will. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Ordinarily Extraordinary Conversations with Women in STEM. You can find a list of definitions, acronyms, and a fact check in the episode notes. If you like this podcast, please like it and write a review. And if you'd like to have more episodes delivered right to you, please feel free to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. And please join me for future episodes. Thank you.